I've been hyped to talk about talk to you. So I know you reached out to me. And then Mark, well, actually, Mark has been reaching out to me for a while, but yeah. Like my plate has always been crazy because I'm just working on so much different shit. So sometimes people hit me in a DM and I'm like, yo, like, you know, well, let's collab, whatever. And then I won't get down to it until like a couple of weeks to like months later, only because like I'm just so backed up with everything. And on top of that, you know how it is. You have kids and like a family and shit like that. Do you have kids?
Yeah, man.
All right, cool. Oh, yeah, you told me that. Two kids. I love it, man. How old?
Tres and ocho.
Ooh, I like it. Those are interesting ages. They're like
fantastic.
Kind of like a little bit far apart.
Dude, my 8-year old, well, he's like 8 and 23 days. So he's like almost minted 8. He's like that kid that can walk on his hands for 30 feet. He's crazy. And then my 3-year old, I've been telling everybody, he sees every wall as a potential door.
Yo, that's like my son. My son, instead of seeing a wall, like my son sees any object that he knows that he's not supposed to have, and he wants to grab it and just like do whatever with it. Mm-hmm. Like I had a cup of beer and he just like looked at me, looked at the beer, and it just went and smacked it and it like went into like the sockets, and I'm like, oh, what the fuck? Like, you know you're not supposed to be doing that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's wild. But so going back, Mark hit me up and he was telling me your story. And I was like, wait, I was like, really? I was like, no way. And I was like, how come you didn't mention that to me? Because then you DM'd me. Yeah. And I was like, you didn't mention any of that. And I was like, all right, you know what? I definitely got to check out the project. I definitely got to sit down with him and kind of chop it up. Totally. But let me introduce this and then we'll get right into it. So everybody, we're on episode 19 right now. And I have a very, very special guest, Doug Knight. He is the creator of Super Wicked White Cell Squadron. I reviewed it on my YouTube channel. If you guys haven't seen that, go check it out. Right now, this podcast is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. We got exclusive content on Patreon. So we're growing this thing, man, committed. But I am excited to have Doug Knight on here. He has an incredible story that, you know, I want him to share with you guys. And then we're also going to geek out and talk about a whole bunch of nerd stuff. We're going to talk about the indie comic industry. I know he goes to comic cons all over, so I want to talk about his experience there. But other than that, man, how you doing, Doug?
I'm good, man. Came off of a few-hour tattoo session today. So it was nice to sit back down and make some money doing some things that I love.
I like it. What type of tat?
It was a scroll with the 10 crack commandments written in it. Okay. Yeah, it was all right. It was like against my recommendations as far as a lot of detail in a little tiny space. But we executed it pretty clean. So I'm happy with it.
I like it. So you are a Biggie fan?
You know what? Actually, no, man. I did my damnedest to like try to get into it when I was doing the art for it. And like I will not deny the lyrical sensibility and the flow, but something about like the octaves and the wavelength just don't register with me. So
really,
yeah, man, it's just like I will never ever shit on talent, and like I'll never ever say that somebody doesn't deserve to be where they are. But I will happily say that like it's just like it's not on my desert island top 10.
Okay. I feel like 10 crack commandments and Biggie kind of go together like hand in hand. Like you really can't help somebody say, oh, 10 crack commandments and not mention Biggie. So what made you get that?
No, I did the tattoo. I didn't do it.
Shit. So yeah, you yeah, do. Because yeah, yeah. I saw you were tatted up. I saw you had like a half sleeve. Yeah. Well, all right, cool. So you do tattoos too.
Yeah, man. I'm a busy, busy fella.
All right, cool. So now, let's get into it. So had you tell us your story, man. First, I want everybody to know your story. I also want to hear it because I haven't heard it from you specifically.
Yeah.
But how did you get into the world of art? You know, obviously you do tattoos, but you also do comics as well. But how'd you get into creating comics? What made you want to do it? And what made you come up with the story of Super Wicked White Cell Squadron?
All right. Well, to get started, I need you to raise your left index finger.
My left?
Yeah. Okay. Now hold it up here. Okay. Now take your right hand and get your little tiny violin ready.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
That's the fucking Bugs Bunny Looney Tunes right there.
So at 4 years old, I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. My parents saw that that I was, complaining about migraines, and that when I go to the toy store, like I'd be looking really close to things. So they took me to my pediatrician at the time. He diagnosed it as attention-seeking behavior, and said that like that I would move on from that phase of like, striking my head off the wall and all that kind of stuff. So 6 months later, they saw that my eyesight was even worse. They took me to SickKids down in Toronto, and then I was diagnosed with brain tumor after my ophthalmologist, shone the beam of light in my face and saw something on my optic nerve. So that began that like that was the origin. So from there, I was on a battery of chemotherapy. Spent a lot of time in the hospital. Probably, I guess 3 4 days every 2 weeks for like 18 months or something like that at that time, and then it was like follow-ups and different appointments and stuff moving forward from there. One of the things about having poor eyesight when I was in the hospital was that I looked too close to the TV in the teen room, so they used to like yell at me because I'd be blocking the video games and stuff like that. And it just really wasn't like, you're a little kid with not a lot to do. So I found the like the craft room, and I remember one day I saw this dude, and he was just crushing a sketch of Vinny from Biker Mice from Mars, and I remember thinking to myself like, that's cool, and as like a little kid does when they see something that a cooler older kid's doing, they pick up, and they try to practice. So that's what I did. I emulated this dude Jason's drawing. And I just got into it. It became that thing where, without having to be prompted or forced or anything, just encouraged, I started drawing. I drew a lot and a lot more, and even more than that, for Christmas my parents got me an easel, and my dad said that that he still remembers watching that first moment where like I posed my my White Ranger action figure and then drew what I was seeing, and he's like, there's something there, like a father would. And so it was, that was it, man. It was just off to the races. Throughout elementary school, didn't matter where they sat me in class, I still couldn't see the board. So it was kind of a futile practice of empathy on the school's part. But it was still, they were doing their best, and I was still not paying attention. So I'd keep my face buried in books, and I'd sketch and doodle and take naps when I was tired. And so I had a very augmented educational path. Throughout high school and stuff, they would same thing. They try to stay on top of my reading materials and stuff like that. But like at that point, I was out to lunch as far as conventional education went. Classes like English, history, the fundamentals of communication and building storytelling and stuff like that. They got me, but like the sciences, the maths, for us French, it was too hard to keep up. My textbooks were like the size of a newspaper and separated into 4 volumes. And so none of the pages lined up with where my peers' pages were. So they'd be reading about like Aristotle, and I'd be like, at the French Inquisition, just because the pages were all jacked up and all over the place. So it was frustrating for me to keep up with stuff like that. So I would just sketch. So I spent a lot of time drawing. When I was about 14, I drew my first like tattoo design for my dad, and he went and got it. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's cool. That's really, that's awesome. And then when I turned 16, because I couldn't get my license, my dad said, well, you want to go get a tattoo? So I went and I got one of my first designs tattooed on me. And then that was kind of like this genesis of like this creative atmosphere that I was surrounded by, like old punk rockers and like, recovered dudes with all these issues that have like fought through it just to make cool art. And the shop that I went to was like one of the first female-owned tattoo studios in Toronto that was like incredibly successful. So like there's all these cool like factors that just like welcomed me into this like entire creative vortex that like I basically got back to school the next day, and I was like, okay, I want to draw. I got like that bug in me. And so that's what kind of sparked the fire and turned it into a blaze for me, was figuring out how I could get into the tattoo industry post high school. And I did the tours of like the colleges and the fine art institutions, like Ontario College of Art and Design was somewhere I took a look at, and Sheridan out in Oakville, a suburb of Toronto I checked out. But like it was just the idea or the prospect of another like 3 or 4 formal years of education where I'm slamming my head off of a wall trying to see the letters and waiting for people to do photocopy. It made me want to like, hide in a little hole, where I realized that like even if I'm just working a counter at a shop, making drawings and kind of progressing myself, like there's a future for me doing something else. So that was that. I committed to the tattoo industry. It was like 14 years ago. It was a bit of a different path to try to get apprenticed and try to, wrangle people into letting a legally blind guy learn how to tattoo. And I've been through the rigor of, I've got like crazy space goggles and stuff made up for me now, but it was a path to get there. I had to learn how to pick and choose my battles and, what would work for me kind of professionally and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. It just that was it, and then the unspeakable years rolled around, and I had a brand new baby. He was born on March 2nd
Hey.
of 2019. No, sorry,
Pisces.
2020, 2020.
Okay. Oh, wait, you said March 2nd, 2020?
Yeah,
Oh, shit, my daughter is March 1st, 2020.
right on, buddy.
Yeah,
So we're
there
like
we go.
we're right in line. Like we went and we took him in for his cleanup procedure on March 13th, and after that everything shut down. I also I build homes at the time. I was working steady with my dad, so we were doing home renovations and stuff, but everything stopped. And I had the infant, which was great. My wife had a rough heel from the cesarean and stuff, so I was like on duty, making sure that she was healing properly and making sure that our 5-year-old at the time was doing online schooling as a senior kindergarten and being responsible for that. And like, so there's all these things. But then I was just like, I still got the iPad. Art hasn't stopped. I just can't practice, my craft. And at that point, I had some outlines and some rough-ins done. I had started probably in like October on my book Chiasm. And then it just turned into a thing. I for whatever reason held myself to a book a month schedule where I try to produce an entire book within 30 days of starting it.
Shit.
And so I got a pretty good handle of like the Marvel Method style of writing. And Chiasm was a really cool project to really start formulating my style and what I wanted to be as an indie creator. It's a sci-fi retelling of my life as a childhood cancer survivor, but you swap out chemotherapy with alien molecules. So it's
Okay.
allowed me to build like this incredibly robust universe where, this character based around me develops like cybernetic armor from the molecules in his brain, and like, it goes from having to fight with each other to fighting the aliens who want to come back, get their intellectual property. Like, I've got this big storyline planned out. I just got to figure out when I can make sure I can put it all down. And one of the cool things about it is that it's so personal that I can always tend to it and develop the story and grow it and tell my tales. But one of the downfalls to it is that some of the subject matter is mature enough that it keeps younger demographics out of reach from being able to connect to it. And so, I was just chilling one day, and it came to me that like there's got to be a platform where I can do an all ages book, have a lot of fun with it, and still make it relative to kids that are experiencing a lifestyle that I had at an early age. And then so going through the tropes of the things that we grew up with, and I just like I will always have a soft spot for power armor and Monster Punch and Mega Mechs. So I came up with the Super Wicked White Cell Squadron, and that was a genesis based off of when I was a kid sitting down to get my inner Venus. My mom would have to literally fight me from the kids' room all the way to the nurse's station, and I'm talking like smack my elbows out from under me when I'd grab onto the door frames, and like I was like the strongest 6-year-old you'd ever have to fight. So one day I sat down in the chair, and like the thing that people rarely talk about is that like the chemotherapy like annihilates your veins. So it was like really hard for them to try to tap me and get a shot. So sometimes it'd be 6, 8, 10 attempts with the IV. Like I hated it. My mom goes, "Hey, do you remember, you know, the White Ranger, you know, Tommy?" I'm like, "Yeah." She goes, "He's your favorite." I said, "Yeah." She's like, "They're sending a whole bunch of White Rangers into your body to fight the monster that's trying to destroy your brain, you know?" And that something about that, like, clicked. And then, so I figured, like, it's such a cool open source, reference for, like, defense against something, that it allowed me to build the Super Wicked White Cell Squadron, and then just make it like something really fun that is a simple enough storytelling, structure so that, like, if other writers or other artists ever want to get involved, I can just say, just make it a positive story where a big monster gets punched by a cool robot. And make sure that whoever reads it is going to, like, take away either a good message or, you know, raise their heart rate a little bit. And you got to, like, you absolutely have to add as many tongue-twisting labels in it as possible. Like, that is essential. Like, the robots, the MRI, and everybody hears MRI and they're like, okay, it's that tube that you sit inside. It's like, so they think MRI, but I called it the Enormous Mechanical Assault Robot Interceptor Class. You know, and it's all about building that, like, that mental strength so that when a kid is like, you know, Rashid, are you ready for your MRI? You know, he's like, he's ready to go to war, right? Like, he's like, he's going to armor up.
They can connect it like your mobile for you.
Exactly. So that's it, man. So then the whole thing spun into wanting to take it into children's hospitals. And so I did the Kickstarter for it, did really good, like, compared to what the starting goal was. And it's currently, we're just pricing out everything with Comics Wellspring, Mark and I, to get all the prints done. But, I last checked, we raised enough for like minimum 150 copies to get printed to go to hospitals. Nice. But we're going to wait to see kind of where the printer is willing to meet us on aspects of it and see how many more I can add on top of what I raised for it. Cause we're also, we also created a coloring book. It's a Royal Wee. Mark came up with the idea, Mark from Lesser Known Comics. And then I sourced a bunch of indie creators from the community that you may have talked to or that you may have seen. And they all contributed some sketches for the coloring book as well. So I've got this like 24-page like hammer down coloring book that's got art that's contributed from like across the indie comics community. So I'm going to send that out with the comic book. And I like, you know, I'm telling everybody it's cheesy, but it's like, I never got like my PhD or anything. So I can't cure cancer, but the goal is to cure like 5 minutes of boredom. So it's been really cool, man. I can't wait to kind of, you know, to put, you know, boots on the ground and start kind of, you know, changing some perception and brightening some days.
Shit, man. Fucking in-depth story, bro. Oh my God, so much shit intertwining with each other. I mean, first I gotta commend you for even getting through that situation, being from a little kid. It's like when you're a kid, it's a little bit different because it's like, yo, kids are like one of the most innocent creatures, or at least human-wise, on the planet. And it's like kids don't choose or even have a choice to be on, I guess, like that level of sickness, whatever
right. know,
it is.
Or the treatment that they're exposed to either, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you kind of use that and let it fuel your passion, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I see that with a lot of creators or a lot of, you know, people in business where it's like they take something that was traumatic when they were young and they either fuel it to get them to where they want to be, or they use it as an excuse to not do what they need to do. So I always got to commend someone. It's like, yo, you took a challenge and you ran with it and you built upon that. It's like, you know, obviously, you know, we always want to be healthy, but it's like, hey, if that was in your story, it's like, all right, cool. You use this as, hey, I want to be focused and be an artist. I want to make tattoos. I want to make comics. And then I want to make comics that inspire and help children that are in similar situations than I am. Super powerful.
Yeah. Thanks, man. It's, crazy, man. When it's interesting. Cause like when people are like, oh, congratulations, you know, it means a lot that like, that I've been able to kind of drop that, like that spark into somebody's life. But at the same time, I'm always like very quick to both accept the apology or the congratulations, but then defer it to the fact that like, you know, short of just having a smile and staying upbeat, like, the doctors did all the work. My parents drove me to and from and supported me my whole life, you know? So, yeah. You know, the congrats, like my thank you is like giving the energy back into the universe and like, and just, you know, utilizing positive energy and talent to, you know, try to impart that. I was shooting the breeze with a cosplayer in Buffalo. And he was saying how he dressed up as J. Jonah Jameson and went to the Children's Hospital. And it was, he was like, it was so cool. But one of the things that we touched on is it's like, you know, the reality is it's not just the task of like creating these cool books. And like, you know, for me, the hard work isn't making the bright colored pictures and writing the fun story. You know, the real work is going to come into putting myself back into situations that, you know, may have caused trauma to me as a child and stuff like that. And then putting all of my crap aside so that I can, you know, contribute to kids who are having a rough times life, in as cool a way as possible, you know? And I've never put myself in that position before of like going back into a children's hospital to be a figure of, you know, inspiration or guidance or anything, because it's never come my way. So I'm really looking forward to the fact that like when that hard work starts, I'll be able to you know, utilize positivity and creativity to you know, wave a cool bright flag.
Yeah, man. And yo, it's like you're legally blind too, and you fucking write,
so they tell me,
doing artwork. It's like, yo, what the fuck? It's like I don't got anything wrong with me. And it's like, yo, this guy's already made 3 comics. Like, yo, it's like, I need to freaking step up my game, man. That's fucking 4. Motivation. I mean, at least for me.
So,
oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry. So actually, let's tighten this up a little bit. Okay. 4 printed currently. Okay. I was part of an anthology for a band called Murder by Death last year. So that's the 5th book. I'm part of the Apollo City Comics Punk Rock Anthology. I've also got the future sci-fi tales from Snowy Works coming out. That's in a month. And I did Ray Gun with my boy Josh Jones from Lesser Known Comics, as well as having 6 more issues of Chiasm on the burner in my iPad. So I'm pretty thick for 3 years worth.
We got a fucking worker here. So anybody listen to this, get off your fucking ass and get to fucking work, bro. That's what I'm fucking talking about.
But make sure you're happy doing it, because if you're not, it's just going to be burning for no reason.
Yo, sometimes I'm like, yo, am I doing enough? Like, I'm writing my own story. I'm editing. I'm like doing shit for myself. And then I'm also collabing with people. And obviously, you know, you got the family life and everything, and I'm still like, yo, am I fucking doing enough, or am I doing too much that I'm like burning out and I'm not moving fast? So there's always like that aspect of being in the grind, kind of figuring out what the hell you need to do. Do you ever feel that it's like, yo, am I not doing enough, or am I doing too much?
I think definitely not too much. I think that like the part that drags me down is if I do a day of like demolition or, you know, something that like, or like working outside in the heat that's out right now, you know, like anything like that, where I come home and like, I've got just enough energy to like get my kids to sleep. And then I'm laying in bed at like 8:30 with them or whatever. And like, I'll kick myself a little bit for like not putting in the extra 3 hours into whatever endeavor I've got going on. But then there's also a point where you have to find that forgiveness for yourself. So I think that like the not doing too much, it doesn't set in, because I know that everything, like, you know, every small brick that is laid will eventually build, you know, the home that you want, right? Like whether it's a mansion, whether it's a tiny house, like it doesn't matter. You got to lay it all one at a time. And some of the slowest masons will build some of the most beautiful houses. You just need to give them room and space to work. So I think that like in being patient with yourself and having like, nobody's got, you know, a pistol to anybody's head with the indie comics game. So nobody can tell you what milestones you should be hitting. And the only real person that you're competing against with anything is yourself, you know, like, David Lujan, Ray Garza, Jay Red, all these crazy creators, Max Flowers, Rhys Jenkins, like all these guys from the Lesser Known Comics umbrella, they're all incredible artists of their own respect. And it's like, I think that to like hold a candle to any of them doesn't do yourself justice, because I'm not doing the same thing as Jade Lauder is doing. And, you know, there's all these cats that are like on their own paths. And so the only thing that I focus on is to make sure that there's a visible improvement in the next thing that I work on versus this thing. You know, the art that I did last week isn't my greatest piece of work, even if it sells more prints than something else that I did next week. It's just a matter of like just setting the standard and keeping to working forward, you know, like, there's the light at the end of my tunnel is just like to, you know, get paid to make books, to pay for bills, to buy a house, to like provide a future where I don't have to worry about my discs degenerating from using a sledgehammer to chip up tile floors. Or like even with tattooing, like when I tattoo, I wear my prescription with these crazy like magnified swing arms over top of my lenses. And so it like puts me like so far, like I can sit back 13 inches from my project, but it zooms me into like within an inch and a half space. So it's like, yeah, you're into this microverse. But if I tattoo for anything more than 4 hours, it feels like I'm deadlifting my optic nerves with my brain. So it's like, that's going to take a toll on me by the time I'm, you know, 45 or whatever. So I want to be able to like set all these things in motion now so that I can establish a reputation for being like unbreakably hardworking, incredibly efficient at how I do it, really talented at the products that I put out, and extremely qualified for whatever task they need me for. And they could be just a creator with an idea, or one of the big three, or like whoever, you know. It's basically a come get it sort of position that I'm putting myself in, because I know that that's what the world needs for creativity.
Shit, bro. It's like, yo, I could just set the camera up and just have you fucking talk. It's like, I don't even need to fucking be here.
I'm gonna build Burr. You're fucking dropping
many gems. It's fucking Lesser Known Comics, guys. Yo, all of you guys just fucking come through, drop mad gems. I see why Mark has you guys on. What are those, like those weekly fucking Zoom meetings and shit
every
like
that?
Every
2 weeks. And now I'm on two, buddy.
Yeah, it's like, yo, see, it's his military background. He probably has you guys doing like sit-ups, and he's just like, never back down.
he's got that.
Never surrender.
He's got that Jocko Willing. It's that decentralized command thing. Yeah.
Dope, man. Dope. Do you have, so I guess I should start asking this question to people that come on my podcast. I always talk to like different friends and shit, but do you have a specific superhero that uses like optics, like their eyes?
Actually, I've got a supervillain. So like, for Chiasm, his armor is biomechanic and bioorganic in nature. So like, it's because he's got two molecules instead of the one. When they clad him in the armor, he's got like the one's all cybernetic and the other side's like a bone carapace. Okay. So it's just like that for me and my tattoo background, it's like that ability to draw like the cool robot stuff and the cool alien stuff. But the eyeballs have to leave his head to, turn into the armor. So I've got like all these cool things of like, you know, the issue zero is like the little kid version of Desmond Phillips sneezing his eyeballs out, and then it possessing an apple and attacking the nun who told him the only way out of cancer is death, which is based off of a true story that I experienced in grade 7. So then, you know, like the whole aspect of like, I want to see like Desmond Phillips when he's 30, like drop into the silhouettes of an alley. And then you just see like the shadow of like the eyeballs rupturing. And then, like, you know, slapping back and turning him into the armor. And then he, like, just comes and, you know, boot fucks a couple bad guys.
That shit sounds like it fucking hurts. And it sounds like a fucking horror movie.
Well,
like,
and that's the thing.
Exploding and shit.
Yeah, it's a lot about body horror for kids with exceptional needs to connect to. Because when my glasses are off, like, my eyes just, they go squirrely, you know. And it's like they're not blasting out of my face. But, you know, the way that some people look at you when they're trying to figure out, like, what eye to look at and stuff, you know, it's a very real thing that you experience where it's just like, okay, yeah. I get it. It's messed up looking. just can we like just stare at the forehead, just right there, just look at this, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of that was where I went with that. I also have a friend that I grew up with. We went to Camp CNIB together, and we have very similar eye conditions, but very different life events that kind of formed who we are. So like where I am rather grand and, you know, broad and whatever, my buddy's just a little dude, where my parents, you know, worked their shit out and got back together after a while. His didn't. He experienced like medical procedures that, you know, affected how his eyes worked and had to go through other things. And I never had to go under the knife for my eyes. So I called him up one day, or I messaged him, and I was like, "Hey man, I got a question for you." He's like, "What's up?" I was like, can I put you in my comic?" He's like, "Yeah, man." I was like, "Can you be one of the super villains?" You know? And he's just like, like how bad? I'm like pretty bad. So I'm going to call him Nystagmus. And his whole thing is going to be like, instead of the, like when he gets the molecule, yeah. Instead of enhancing his life because of the qualities that it protected against, it's going to like cue up on the nystagmus, so the shaking of the eyes. It's going to trigger like phase shifting that he can't control. So it'd be like this villain that's like under, you know, I got like, again, that image of like he's sitting in the observation room, the nurse goes in to talk to him, and he like phase, snaps the neck and then escapes or whatever, right? Like, so I just, yeah. Like, I have that like, that real like story built up of like, how do you catch, you know, like if he's shaking everywhere and the other dude can't focus because his eyes are like, you know, on the side of his hands, like how do you fight, like how do you catch that, you know? So it's I have a lot of fun building up things that are adjacent to the vision.
Okay, all right, cool. I like that. One of my I learned at a very young age, like, you know, people with like cross eyes, one of the most toughest kids when I was in high school. I can't even call him a kid. He was like a grown ass man. He got left back like 1,000 times. His name was Calvin. I hope he never hears this because he'll definitely hunt me down when I go back to my hometown. But he had like a cross eye. And I remember vividly when I was in high school, got to 9th grade, and somebody made fun of him about his eye, and he popped that kid so hard. I was like, all right, I need to get out of high school immediately. he was literally a grown man. He was like 35 in like 11th grade. He got a left back a million times. From that day forward, I just knew. It was like, all right, cool, never, like, you know, just keep it normal, keep it pushing with you know, with things like that.
Totally.
Very intriguing.
Just real quick, so I played hockey for a hockey team with special needs athletes. So all range of mental and physical, you know, disabilities. And what that taught me over the 15 years that I played was like, you know, the fact that like some of the funniest people I know have Down syndrome, and some of the like, you know, hardest working athletes have autism and stuff like that. So I was able to really build that, understanding of looking at people as being, you know, athletes and teammates, not individuals with exceptional needs. And I think that like, it's a very hard thing to learn. But I do believe that like everybody needs to be exposed to a learning situation like that, because it's very beneficial to understanding and compassion.
Yeah, I used to work at a daycare, and I had a kid that was autistic, and like none of the counselors, teachers, whatever you want to call them, like would handle them properly. So I was like, you know what? I got this. So I downloaded an emulator onto one of the computers, and it was like Super Mario Brothers, and I would play it with him. So then anytime he would like get like a little bit riled up, I was like, hey, Gabriel, I was like, you want to play Super Mario with me later? It's like, let's get our work done. Let's get our snack, and then like we could play. And then he, like, I became his favorite counselors, because it's like, yo, it's like sometimes you just have to, like, go the extra mile, but not, like, overdo it. Mm-hmm. And just figure out, it's like, yo, we're all human, so you have to figure out, you know, how to maneuver with people regardless if they have a disability, a challenge, or not. It's like, yo, I don't have anything, and it's like, I'm probably one of, like, the most, like, drastic weird people to like fucking work with. It's like I'm so out there, it's like I could just splurt out something, and it's like, yo, it's like you just gotta learn how to work with people. That's it. Everybody's individual.
Yeah
man. I forgot what I was gonna say before. I think I was, what the hell was I saying? I was gonna say one of my things is I always like the the villains that are like super evil, or at least in the beginning, but then at the end, especially before a lot of these villains like die, you'll kind of see like, oh shit, this villain was actually good, or everything that they did was because they wanted to redeem themselves. So like, I don't know if you've ever watched Yu Yu Hakusho, but Tagoro, right? He was like this, he's almost like the Hulk. He's like this big badass guy. And long story short, he basically made these fighters go into this tournament, and one of the fighters, his master, was somebody that was on his team years ago, and he was actually in love with her, but he took his lust for power, basically separated between her and him. And long story short, all of these years after, it's like all of these evil deeds, and you're like, yo, this guy Tagoro's fucked up. And then at the end, it's like, yo, this guy just wanted to redeem himself for all of the shit that he did. Another character, which actually uses optics, is Itachi, right? He seemed like a bad character in Naruto. And then when you get towards the end, you're like, holy shit, this guy was good the whole fucking time. And that's how I feel I am. It's like, I feel like I have done crazy shit in my past, but I've done the crazy shit for a specific reason. And you can always redeem yourself, if that makes sense. Like, you should never just limit yourself and feel that, hey, you're just stuck in this box. You can always get out of that box.
I think there's valuable lessons on both sides of the spectrum, as far as, like, it's good to show people that, like, communication and apologizing can undo some pretty serious stuff. But I also think that from, like, both a writing point and a life standpoint, creating just a bad motherfucker is really important too, because, like, you know, sometimes the hardest lesson to learn is to cut that evil asshole out of your life. And I think that, like, by building, like, you know, a couple bad guys where it's just like, there's no redeeming it. And, like, at some point, like, they're going to have to make that decision to cross that dark line. You know, like the Batman Joker thing, like, Dark Knight Returns, man, is like, that's one of those, like, okay, you know, moments where everybody's just like, so there's no, like, happy ending here. It just gets darker and darker. And I think that, like, I think that, like, the heavy metal of it is, like, the sometimes bad stuff is out there, and, like, you have to just fight, like, tooth and claw to defeat it. You know, like, there's the only, like, positive outcome out of having cancer is that you hopefully develop a fighter's attitude, you know, like, there's, it's not like, like, I'm not cool with the brain tumor that's still in my head, because, you know, as small or inactive as it is, it's still just a dickhead waiting to explode and take me out, as far as I'm concerned, right? So, you know, I can't imagine it's ever going to wake up and be like, Doug, it's been a while, I figure I'd just make amends, sorry for the childhood thing, you know, like, like, if that thing wakes up and comes back, it's like, all right, let's go try to knock this thing out again. So I totally see, like, the benefit of the comeback story, but I also think that, like, it's fun to write really bad characters too.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. I also like the bad characters that still make you seem, it's like, you know, they kind of had a point. So, like a Thanos. And not Thanos from the comics, because Thanos from the comics, he just wanted to kill. But more so Thanos from MCU. He's like, I'm going to do whatever I can to get these Infinity Stones to wipe out half of the universe because resources are running thin.
Who's the dude from Invincible? Not Diamondback.
Invincible.
Steelheart? No, the guy who takes over the mob in the show there. The brother with the steel skin.
I don't remember the names. I gotta rewatch
Invincible. I just started it. Yeah, it's so dope.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. Oh, and that shit was fucking amazing. That shit came out during COVID, right?
Yeah, it did. It did.
Yeah, that shit was good.
Yeah, and now we got, like, the end of the summer for season two. Oh my god, I cannot wait.
Yeah, yeah, I'm hyped for that. Yeah, now that you mention it, I definitely have to rewatch it. Yeah, especially when season two is coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were saying about the what'd you say, the steel mob boss guy?
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, it's that same thing where, like, he's getting handled by the kingpin at one point, and then homie, the kid helps him, like, take the guy out for him, just to, like, supersede that, like, take that seat of power. And, like, the whole thing is, like, He's just trying to like at first make money by doing these dirty deeds to pay for his kids' education and stuff like that, you know, like, so yeah, I like stuff like that where it's like everybody, like the working mentality, you know, like, you know, the guy that goes and cleans porta potties doesn't want to do that, but he's got a family at home that he's providing for, you know? So it's,
Yeah. Those type of characters are always, always good. And that's one of the things that I take into consideration as I'm writing my project, because I go through especially a lot of indie creators. And even though I'm not super hypercritical for indie creators as I would be for like a Marvel or Image Comics or Dark Horse, because those are major companies. It's like, they're going to get paid regardless. Yeah, it's like, yo, I'm not buying into your multi-billion dollar company for you to give me ass projects. So it's like, I'm going to be critical.
For sure.
Whereas indie, it's like, it's different. But I'm always looking at the motive of the villains compared to the story. So if it's just like a fun story where it's like there's really like no motive and it's, then that's totally fine. That's totally cool. But like if the story is going to be in depth and then there's no motive to this villain or there's no motive to the main character, then I'm always thinking, I'm like, all right, you know, what is this? Or why am I reading this? Or what do you want the writer to get out of it?
Totally.
So then I ask those questions, like when I'm writing, I don't care if it's one page on my project or the full book. It's like, what do I want the reader to get out of this from beginning to end?
Yeah.
What do I want the reader to get out of this from the top of the page to the bottom of the page? Like, I want it to be like, top of the page, bottom of the page is an episode. And that's why I love TikTok reels. Not that I love TikTok and all that shit, but it plays on the psyche of humans. It's like, yo, we're like 15 second, you know, microwave mentality.
Yeah.
You know, get to the point. How can you capture my attention? And what I see in just the industry or when you're selling a product is like, how do you capture somebody's attention? How do you stop them?
Yeah.
It could be your story with you battling a brain tumor and then you creating your own project. Right there is a marketing selling point and people are going to support you and read your project. Like, that's dope. But then how can you take it a step further? All right, the first page, what could I do?
Yep.
How can I sell people on the artwork? How can I sell people on the story? And I don't mean like salesy. I just mean like, you know.
No, drawing in people to invest their life into your project. It's it's totally a viable thing. Like, that's one of the at the convention in Buffalo. Like, so Mark and I worked Indianapolis back in May, and then we did we met up and did Buffalo together last week. And like, you know, the improvements there were like we upgraded our background and we upgraded our sales tactics. And at the end, like by the halfway point, like the lady across the way from us, Jenny, who was selling Lego figurines and stuff, she's like, I love you guys. You guys are great. I held back. It's like, Jenny, I'm going to sell plaque to gingivitis, you know, like, because it's like, you got to get into this groove of like, you know, it's this technique of like offering people free stuff. They come, they pick something up that like, draws their attention to, and then you slap them with the sales pitch, you know, and you got to do it in like a way that's like they're looking at something and they're hearing what it's about, and then you catch their attention. So, you know, they pick up my postcard, you know, they pick that up and it's just like, oh yeah, Chiasm's my story. It's a sci-fi retelling my life as a childhood cancer survivor, swap out chemotherapy with alien molecules. And they're either like, put it back, or they're like, you know, the double take, and then it's there, and it's like, yeah, check it out. This is my book. You know, the first issue is all about this, and you know, it gives you the opportunity to expand on it. But like, you know, if the art was dog shit, I wouldn't be pushing it. You know, and if the writing was crap, I wouldn't be selling it. So I think it's having the confidence once you're done with that page to just be like, it's good. You know, it might not be my best, but it's my really good thing right now. And I can't wait for the next one to be better. And you have to show people that you've got a momentum building in your project that you know, they're not going to read zero, move to one and say, I like zero better. They're going to get to one and be like, holy damn, that was emotional and action packed. And then they're going to pick up two and then be like, oh shit. Like, now it's like, you know, even more emotional, even more action packed. What's going to happen in three? You know, and so it's like, I think that like that show me aspect of it is really important. And one of the things that I did with part one and part two of Chiasm was I took the show me aspect away from the cover, so that like when I'm selling it in person, you know, I got to get them with the words. And then when they open up the colors, it's like, you know, 1997's knocking at the door and ready to punch you in the face with a color palette. So, you know, I just love having fun with that, you know?
Okay. How do you, you said, that you wouldn't sell it if it was dog shit, as far as the artwork and the writing.
Yeah.
What are you doing to either find out or make sure that your project's not dog shit? Like, do you nothing. Have... All right, there we go. We got the confidence. I like it. I like it. I like it. And the reason that I ask is because, you know, I'm sure that there's creators out there. There are creators where I read it where it's like, yo, this ain't it. But it's like, you know, I don't want to hurt feelings. So it's like, I always want to give people some sort of way. It's like, here, these are the steps that you need to do to make sure that your project slaps or this shit is trash. Like,
yeah, I mean,
what recommendations would you give to someone?
Put enough work into the training that like you're confident when it comes time to execute that you've done the work to get you to the dance floor. You know, like don't create a comic without doing any rough sketches. You know, don't debut a character without kind of taking the time to think about what it's going to do. You know, everything in this life, especially an independent endeavor, is all about taking the risk and being brave enough to put it out there. And I think that like, you know, when I first started, I remember somebody, my buddy was managing my Reddit for me, and somebody said, your first idea doesn't have to be your best idea. And it pissed me off because I realized, like, for me at the time, I just thought that this person, you know, just whipped their joint out and was taking a leak all over the concept that I had built. But what I did after I thought about it was I realized that, like, you know, they're right and they're wrong. Your first idea doesn't have to be your best idea. It just has to be a really, like, it's got to be a strong enough idea for you to back. You know, you have to be able to run with the horse that you put in that race. And I think that, you know, as far as a, like, in a what separates me from them kind of situation is I separate me from them, you know? So if you're worried about what the cat with the full digital studio producing their own manga is doing down the street, you're always going to be worried about them. So if people see that the project that you're putting out is like, it's 100% your juice, you know, they're going to respond to that. You know, I think that like, confidence and knowing that like, this isn't your final destination, you know, is important too, because it's like, you know, the attitude of like, what do you think, you know, that what do you think of this? As soon as you expose yourself for people to like give you that critical eye, you're opening yourself up to get a sucker punch of like, you know, not reality, but just like some people just want to be spiteful. You know, some people, whether they pride themselves on being honest reviewers or just really like taking a piss on hard work because they're envious of the fact that they could never complete their vision. You know, you don't know where people are coming from. And in today's society where everybody's got brave thumbs, but nobody's going to look you in the eye and like, and tell you something when you're like standing, you know, toe to toe with them. It's a real risky situation. So, you know, I got to shoot the shit with Ken Lashley for quite a bit at the convention. And like, and you know, he said like when you're at these shows, you're doing the part of the job that nobody wants to do. Everybody wants to create, everybody wants to put out their vision and like, and have the world gravitate to it. But nobody wants to represent their story and their talent and their, and do the sales of the art. Like for a lot of introverted people, that's like pulling thumbnails, you know, but like you have to overcome that and you have to be the steak and the sizzle, you know? And so like, it's that thing where it's like, if you want to start that project, be 180% in on that project, because, you know, even if it's like, side scrolling video game style simplicity with like really quirky writing or even depressing writing, who knows, if you put 180% into it and you believe in it, then someone's going to see that you believe in it and they're going to pay you $8 for it. Or they're going to tell a friend about it, or, you know what I mean? So opportunity doesn't knock unless you like, you represent yourself as strongly as possible.
Damn, man. doing a fucking TED Talk right here on the podcast. I fucking love it.
You just got to make sure you get some of those Major Pain edits in there for me.
Oh, shit, yes. Oh, I love that movie, man. I've watched that movie like a million times, bro.
You want me to take your mind off that needle, boy?
Yo, I always think of the fucking scenario where fucking Hillary Banks is like, he's talking to the kid and the kid's like got the fucking, he's like, there's a monster in my bedroom. He takes out the gun, he just fucking blasts it.
Yeah,
he's like, yo, pop your titty out his mouth and stop baby. I want to say that to my wife so bad about my
but
son,
she whoop you.
I'm like, yeah, you gotta chill, Brandon. You gotta chill. This ain't 1995, right? We're in 2023 right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
Yeah. Did you ever watch Blank Man?
Of course I watched Blank Man, bro. Legendary movie. Legendary.
Yeah. My dad used to, like, we dropped my mom off at the grocery store. And, you know, I'm like, from a biracial family. And we go do donuts in the grocery store parking lot. But my dad would sing, Black Man, you know, so we all, like, me and my sister would be laughing our asses off as he's doing like donuts in his truck and yelling, Black Man, you know. And so my mom would get in the car and she'd be like, what are you guys laughing at? Obviously, like, we think we were getting away with like murder, but she'd see that there's clear like smoking donuts in the middle of the driveway and stuff, right? But
it's crazy, like, movies like that used to exist, like Blank Man, Meteor Man,
mm-hmm. Jawana Man.
Oh man, I heard that they want to make a second Jawana Man.
Oh, that'd be an interesting one nowadays.
It'd be very relevant right now, mm-hmm. because, you know, obviously that, you know, everybody's, you know, with the LGBTQ, and it's like having trans people play in sports and shit like that, mm-hmm. and it's like, yo, if LeBron James dressed up as a woman and was like, yo, I identify as a woman, he's gonna be dunking the shit out of everybody in the WNBA. It's like, yo, we've seen this movie already. It's called Jawana Man. It's like, obviously people haven't seen it. Like, it's like he was throwing up like 80 points by himself in that movie.
Yeah, so I mean, but it's a good opportunity to flex on some good writing, because, you know, now yes. that you're working in such a sensitive time, it's the next person's chance to navigate turbulent waters and do it well. So bring it on.
Absolutely. But you know what, Doug, I appreciate this. We will cut this here. I got a couple of good questions that I want to ask you for Patreon.
Let's go.
Keep it like short. I want to be respectful of your time. But do you have anything that you want to plug before we get out of here?
I've got Ray Gun coming out on the Batch 5 Kickstarter with Lesser Known Comics. It's a super cool book about an intergalactic custodian team cleaning up the galaxy's biggest messes. So I did all the art and lettering on that. It was created by Josh Jones. I also got Future Sci-Fi Tales dropping, I believe, in August from Snowy Works. It is a story about a dude getting crash landed on an Amazonian planet and having to be the sole reproducer with the Uber mother. So that's all I'll do with that one.
Yes, what we're going to talk about on Patreon is all of these fucking story ideas that you guys have that are so outlandish and crazy, and they kind of fit right at home with Lesser Known Comics. But we'll talk about that and how you guys freaking, like, actually make this shit work.
You bet, man.
Cool, man. Cool. But yeah, so we got those stories. Make sure you guys support them. Make sure you guys follow Doug Knight and Lesser Known Comics on Instagram. And yes, episode 19. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Patreon for the exclusives. Other than that, I will see you guys for the next interview. All right. Deuces, YouTube.